Southern gaped.
Sold out? What does that mean? He sold his business, all his properties to McClellan? Everything? Including Maddie's?
Southern looked even more stunned.
Yes,
said Jameson.
Including Maddie's.
Southern shook her head.
So I guess that explains why she was going out there. That would have been devastating for her.
She paused.
So Stuart kills himself and then Hugh does too? McClellan may not have been a suicide,
said Jameson.
You mean someone murdered him?
Decker interjected. What else did Caroline tell you?
She wasn't making a whole lot of sense, but she did tell me that Hugh had betrayed her trust, only I didn't know what she meant until now. What else?
Asked Jameson. Southern's features turned grim.
She told me she walked into his office, ready to have it out with him, and then she saw him, dead. She started to become hysterical at that point. I went and got a nurse, and she gave her the medication.
At that moment, Shane hurried up to them, looking wildly around. What the hell is going on? I just got back to town. Joe texted and said Caroline was in the hospital, but didn't say why. Jameson said,
She's going to be fine, Shane, but she's had a shock. Her father's dead.
Shane whirled around to look at Jameson. Dead? What are you talking about?
He was found dead in his home last night. It looks like he killed himself.
Where's Caroline? I need to see her.
She's asleep.
I still need to see her. They went back into the room. Shane hurried over to the bed and looked down at Caroline. You're sure she's going to be okay?
Yes,
said Southern.
She had a concussion and just needs to rest.
He backed away from the bed as Caroline stirred in her sleep and said in a lower voice,
Why would my dad kill himself?
Decker glanced at Jameson before asking Shane, Did you know your father and Hugh Dawson were doing a deal together? Shane glanced at Southern before plopping down in a chair. Yeah, I knew they were doing some deal, but no details. He probably didn't trust me with the information, and I knew they had been meeting on the sly, but I didn't know it was for the whole business.
Did it surprise you,
said Jameson,
that your dad was buying Dawson out?
Hugh Dawson has been sick of this place for a long time, and who can blame him? All you got are companies digging the land up to get the oil and gas, and you got all these people coming here who don't give a crap about this place. They just want to make their pile and go back to where they came from when it's all gone. Southern protested.
That's not really true anymore, Shane. There are more families coming here and putting roots down.
He waved this off. It'll always be a mining town. And when everything's sucked out, what then? You really think people are going to stick around here? Decker said, So Dawson wanted to get out? You know that for a fact? When Maddie was alive, they were fixing to go to France. All of them. Caroline, too.
But then Maddie died,
said Jameson. Shane nodded. And Hugh built his big house, but I could tell the man's heart wasn't in it.
So he might have wanted to sell out?
Yeah, and my old man would be the only one with the money to buy him out. And it would help his business. Hell, he'd pay his workers to get the oil and gas out, and they'd pay him all that money back in rent and food and whatnot. Like the old company coal mining towns, observed Decker. Right, Decker said. I want you to take a few deep breaths, Shane. Why? Because I have something to tell you that will be upsetting. Hell, Decker, I've seen my buddies blown to pieces in Iraq and Afghanistan, okay? Okay. So do you have any idea why Dawson would leave a suicide note saying that he killed your father? The blood slowly drained from Shane's face. Hugh said he killed my dad. We found a note that said that, and there is some forensic evidence pointing to his having done so.
What kind of evidence?
Asked Southern quickly. We can't get into that, replied Decker. Shane rose on wobbly legs. He killed my old man?
At least that's what the note said,
said Jameson. You sure he wrote it?
Several people identified it as his handwriting.
Son of a bitch. He turned and looked at Caroline. In a low voice, he added, Does she know about this? Decker shook his head. No, she doesn't. He paused and sized Shane up. Of course, with your father dead, you're a very wealthy man. He glanced at Caroline, and she's a very rich woman. Shane glanced at him. If my old man left me anything. So you haven't seen his will? Never had a reason to. Not into money, said Decker. With all that, you could live in grand style. Never been one much for style, said Shane. And with that, he went over to the bed, bent down, kissed Caroline on the forehead, and walked out. Southern watched him go with a sad expression.
I've known him since he was a baby,
she said.
Him and Joe. Watched them grow up together with Caroline.
We understand they were pretty tight, said Decker.
Inseparable was more like it. This was before Hugh and Stuart were all super competitive with their businesses. The kids could just be kids. Caroline was like a sister with her two protective brothers, least she was back then. What about her actual brother?
Asked Jameson.
Junior was always quiet and kept to himself. He was uncomfortable around his family, especially his father. Caroline, Joe, and Shane would roughhouse, but not Junior. I guess later when he came out,
prompted Jameson. Southern's lips pursed.
Caroline and his mom stood by him, that was for sure, but Hugh was especially brutal. That's what Kelly told us. Hugh wanted sons like him, strong, aggressive, kick-ass, none of the things Junior was. So did he see Kelly and Shane as sort of his sons?
Asked Jameson.
That's very perceptive of you, because in a way he did, yes. He went to all the football games. Junior was the drum major of the marching band at school. He could play pretty much any musical instrument. But did his daddy acknowledge any of that? No. He just cheered on Joe and Shane scoring touchdowns. And when they got older? Hugh and Stuart were at each other's throats by then. Caroline got sent off to college to learn what she needed to learn to inherit the business. Joe became a cop, as you know. Shane joined the army right out of high school, so like that, everything changed. The gang went their separate ways. Kelly was the only one left here,
said Jameson.
Yeah, I'd see him around town. He looked like a lost pup.
She smiled sadly.
I felt badly for him. His two best friends gone like that. Then Caroline graduated and came back. After that, Shane returned home, but it was never the same. Then Maddie died. That nearly destroyed Hugh. I didn't much care for the man, but I have to give him credit where it's due. He loved his wife.
You seem to have definite opinions of all of them, noted Decker. Southern gazed at him.
And that's what they are, my opinions. You can accept them or not.
Jameson glanced over at the sleeping Caroline.
And what about Caroline? Kelly and Hugh had a discussion about her. Kelly thought her father wanted Caroline to move to France with him to find a man there to marry and have a big family. Hell, I thought she might stay right here and marry Joe or Shane. But that never happened. If you want my 2 cents, I think her seeing how her father treated her brother just wrecked her. The names he would call his own son, right out in public. The ridicule. It was like watching a TV show from the 60s or something. So cruel. So mean.
She shook her head.
So to answer your question, I don't know if she'll ever find someone. I hope she does. She deserves to be happy.
Daddy's perfect little girl, said Decker.
What?
I told Caroline before that that's what I think her dad saw in her. She said there was no such thing.
Well,
said Southern.
I think she's right about that.
Chapter 70.
So Dawson killed his rival and then shot himself. At least that part of the case is closed.
After Jameson said this, she glanced at her partner. She was driving them back to the hotel.
Decker, did you hear me?
Decker didn't comment.
And once again, this has nothing to do with the ticking time bomb,
she added.
We're still at square zero there.
Not quite.
What do you mean?
She shot back.
Are you holding out on me? I hate when you do that. I am your partner. I bet Roby doesn't hold out on Jessica Real.
I'm not holding out on you. I'm just thinking.
Of what?
Decker closed his eyes and downloaded a memory. Speaking of the ticking time bomb, remember what she told us Kramer said? To maybe not grow our own food?
Wait a minute. Who said that?
Judith White. Kramer advised her not to grow food on her land. That's what she told us when we interviewed her.
That's right, she did,
Jameson said.
Wait a minute, their farm is right next to the Air Force facility. Are you thinking...
Decker didn't answer right away because another memory came to him. It was something Daniels had said, and it was perhaps even more ominous than Kramer's comment. Let's drive out to the brothers' place again.
Why?
Just humor me, Alex.
Okay, but you don't make it easy,
she snapped. Since when have I ever been easy?
Well, you could make an effort every once in a while.
Jameson cut a sharp U-turn and headed off in the opposite direction. 40 minutes later, they pulled to a stop in front of the metal farm gate that was the main entrance to the brothers' colony. The gate was now closed. Jameson put the SUV in park and said,
Okay, now what?
Decker got out and started to look around. Jameson followed him.
What are we looking for?
He stared across the acres of farmland. They've been here a while, right? The brothers, I mean.
You know they have?
I mean at this location. Jameson looked uncertain.
Well, from the looks of things, they've been here a few years. It would take at least that long to build all this up to what we're seeing today.
Decker continued to watch as twin John Deere tractors moved slowly across a field, far in the distance. Beyond that was the Air Force station. I think you're right about that.
But why is the amount of time they've been here important?
It's just a theory, he said absently.
Can you explain your theory?
She said curtly. He didn't answer. Decker headed back to the SUV, and she followed, not looking happy. This can't be right, he said, stopping at the vehicle's passenger door.
What can't be?
If it were on the Air Force property, he began. But now Jameson saw what he was getting at and leapt ahead of him.
The biochemical weapons. No one could get to them if they were on the Air Force property, meaning they must be on the land they auctioned off.
Right, but I don't see how they could be on the brothers' land. I mean, how could anyone hoping to get to the WMDs go there without them knowing? He paused, and his confused look deepened. But why else would Kramer have mentioned to Judith White not to eat the crops they were growing there?
Meaning she thought if the weapons were buried, they might have leached out and contaminated the soil.
Exactly. Realization grew across Jameson's features.
But Decker, part of the auctioned land was leased. The brothers don't control it.
He shot her a look. The frackers. Come on. They ran to the SUV and jumped in. After they had driven for a bit, Jameson pulled off next to the land occupied by the All-American Energy Company drilling site. Got your binoculars? Decker asked. She pulled the optics from the console and handed them across. Decker focused the binoculars and surveyed the site. Then he looked in the distance at the adjacent Air Force station and the ground in between. After about a minute, she said,
See anything interesting?
It's more what I'm not seeing.
What?
She said. There's nobody working the site. It's empty. I wonder if they've finished fracking it.
Let me see.
She slowly surveyed the property and then lowered the binoculars.
But if they've finished fracking, why isn't there a gas flare on the vent pipe sticking up over there? Remember I noticed that before and you called it a miracle? And I don't see any rig pumping the oil up like the other sites have either.
We need to ask an expert. And I know just the person. Chapter 71. They skidded to a stop at the oil rig that Stan Baker was staging and jumped out of the SUV. They hustled up to the trailer. Decker didn't bother knocking. He just burst in with Jameson right behind. Baker was seated in front of the computer terminals. He whirled around to stare at them. Hey, what are you two doing here?
The All-American Energy Company, said Decker.
What about them?
There's nobody working the site.
What do you mean?
No trucks, no people, no activity.
Decker thought they might have finished fracking the site, but we couldn't be sure,
said Jameson.
So we came to see you, since you're the expert.
Baker shook his head. They couldn't have finished fracking that well. They haven't been there long enough. They haven't even been drilling that long, so they couldn't have gotten down all that far.
Stan, how come McClellan didn't get the rights to that parcel of land? He's got most all the other ones around here.
I heard scuttlebutt that All American kept bidding the price up to where it got crazy, like 2 or 3 times what it was worth. I guess McClellan just thought those boys didn't know what the hell they were doing.
I think they knew exactly what they were doing, said Decker ominously.
Jameson said,
And they have one of those vent pipes like we've seen around, but there's no lit flare coming off it.
A vent pipe? Baker looked puzzled. No way they could be having gas coming up at this stage. Decker suddenly flinched.
How far could they have gone down by now?
If I had to guess, I'd say no more than a couple 100 feet.
That's what I was afraid you might say.
Afraid? Why? Decker looked at Jameson.
I think we just found our ticking time bomb.
When they reached the fenced-in area at the All-American Energy Company, Decker jumped out of the SUV and tried to open the gate. It was locked. He climbed back into the vehicle.
Ram it, Alex, he ordered.
Are you...
Just do it. We're out of time.
Baker, who was in the back seat, curled his fingers around his armrest and looked nervously at his brother-in-law. Jameson gunned the motor, put it in drive, and slammed her foot down on the gas pedal. The big SUV leapt forward and smashed through the gates. They leapt out, with Decker leading the way to the trailer. The door was locked.
Decker, we don't have a warrant,
said Jameson.
To hell with a warrant, Alex.
He pulled his gun and shot the lock off. He kicked open the door, and they plunged inside. It was set up much like Baker's trailer, but there was only one computer monitor on the desk with what looked to be live data covering it. Decker looked at the screen and said,
Stan, can you make sense of this?
Baker sat down in the chair and started studying the graphs and other information flowing over the monitor's face.
No, I can't, because it doesn't make a bit of sense, he said. What doesn't? Said Decker. Well, for starters, I was right. They've only drilled down about 200 feet. At about the 150-foot mark, they've started to go horizontally at about a 45-degree angle.
He used the mouse to manipulate the screen. Another image flickered up.
And what is that thing?
They all stared at where he was pointing. It was represented on the screen as large and black.
They've got imaging sensors in the hole, obviously, and that sucker is showing up. How big do you reckon that is? Asked Decker.
If I had to thumbnail it, based on the scales I'm used to, I'd say it's about 50 feet square.
So about the size of an average house.
About, yeah. Wait, you don't think there's a house down there?
No, but it's a big space, and you have to wonder what's in it. And the All-American Energy Company is obviously curious, because from the screen, it looks like they've drilled right into it.
He indicated a spot on the screen.
Do you see where it shows one of the walls being pierced?
Decker, the biochem weapons!
Exclaimed Jameson.
The what?
Barked Baker.
I think we found them, said Decker. And so did they.
He glanced out the window of the trailer.
And why do I think that whatever is down there is an airborne weapon, and that right this minute it's being brought to the surface through that pipe?
Holy shit, said Baker.
Stan, how do we stop that from happening? As fast as possible.
Baker ran outside and they followed. He rushed over to the drill site and stopped dead.
That's odd as hell. They've got the vent pipe directly attached to the drill hole.
Decker barked.
It's not odd if that's how they're bringing this shit to the surface. It'll cover the whole area, maybe the whole state.
But how are they bringing it up here?
Said Jameson.
It's not like oil, and the pressure makes it move up into the pipe and to the surface like Stan described to us.
Do you hear that? Said Baker.
What?
Said Decker.
That low hum from somewhere. If I had to guess, they've got some sort of vacuum system built into their equipment. That must be how they're bringing whatever is down there up here. They're creating a suction line. Can we turn it off?
Said Decker. Baker shook his head.
Take too long to find it and figure out how to do it. And if the suction has already been deployed, it might not matter if we turn it off. It'll be like a siphon hose into a gas tank.
Jameson exclaimed.
But if they stored that shit down there all those decades ago, won't it be like in bottles or some other containers and on shelves or even in some sort of secure vault? It's not like gas sitting in a tank that'll just be free to come up once a suction is started.
Baker snapped his fingers. But it might if they sent a detonator down there first and blew everything up. That would smash whatever containers they're in and also create pressure vacuums within that bunker. Once pierced, the stuff, if it is airborne, would seek the point of least resistance to get out. And that would be this pipe. At least we have to assume it would be. Baker quickly examined the roughly 12-foot-tall pipe and then pulled out his phone. Rick, this is Stan. I need a concrete pumper at the All-American Energy Company site. Yeah, I know that's not our job. Just do it and tell them to move their ass. We got a pumper all loaded and ready to go over there. I want it here in 10 minutes. 5 would be better. Do it.
Guys!
Jameson had gone back into the trailer and now appeared in the doorway. They ran back inside. She was pointing to the screen.
Isn't that the pressure indicator you showed us back at your trailer, Stan?
Yeah, said Baker.
Well, it just spiked.
What does that mean?
Said Decker anxiously. Baker said, It means whatever the hell is down there is coming up here, and fast.
Oh, shit,
Jameson exclaimed. Come on, yelled Baker. They all ran back outside, and Baker started searching the worksite area.
What are we looking for?
Cried out Jameson.
Something to cap that pipe. Can't we just bang the shit out of the end of the pipe and close it up that way?
Said Decker.
It's 12 feet off the ground, Amos, and do you see anything here to bang it with? And if you're right about the crap down there, it has to be airtight.
A piece of metal?
Suggested Jameson.
You're talking a lot of pressure in that pipe, including all the air that's been trapped in that bunker. Unless it's welded on, we can't count on a metal cap holding, and we don't have time to weld it or thread it.
They all looked frantically around.
There, shouted Baker.
It was a hose attached to a 1,000-gallon barrel of water. He grabbed the hose and ran the end of it over to the vent pipe. He flipped a box over and stood on it.
Alex, take the hose and get on my shoulders. Amos, there's a hand crank on that water tank. Once Alex gets the hose in the pipe, pump like your life depends on it.
Well, it does, Decker muttered, getting in position.
Alex took the hose. Baker bent down, and she climbed onto his broad shoulders. She settled in as he stood up straight. The top of the pipe was still a foot above her outstretched hands, but she worked the hose up and then managed to get the end pointed into the wide pipe.
Go, Amos! Shouted Baker unnecessarily, because Decker was already pumping like mad.
A few seconds later, water started coursing through the hose and into the pipe.
Are you sure this will work?
Said Jameson.
Water is heavier than air, so it should buy us some time until the concrete pumper truck gets here.
How will we know if it's worked?
Jameson called out.
We won't be dead,
retorted Decker, breathing hard and furiously turning the hand crank. And it did apparently work, because they didn't die. The pumper truck showed up a few minutes later, and Baker directed the stunned men to fill the pipe with concrete. After that, Decker, Jameson, and Baker slumped to the ground. Decker looked at his brother-in-law.
You're a genius, Stan. You should get a medal.
Jameson put a shaky hand on Baker's shoulder.
I second that. A really big one.
Decker let out a long breath.
Well, we stopped the time bomb. Now we just have to figure out who set it off and why.
Chapter 72.
So you figured all that out from Kramer's comment about not eating stuff grown on that land?
Said Jameson. They were driving back to town. Decker had called Roby and brought him up to speed. Roby had told him they were calling in the DOD and the Department of Homeland Security to take over the situation.
Not just that, it was also something that Brad Daniels said
Decker.
Which was what?
He expressed surprise and maybe fear when we told him about the activity going on at the land the Air Force had sold. He said, they're drilling on that land?
I don't remember him even saying that,
said Jameson.
Well, that's sort of my department, to recall stuff like that. But he lied to us. They didn't get rid of that stockpile.
Maybe he thought they had.
No, he wouldn't have been concerned about them drilling on the land unless he knew that stuff was down there.
Jameson nodded.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. I suppose he didn't trust us with the information.
And then there was an off-color section of wall in the lower level of the radar building. I think there was a door there that was later walled up. And why have a door more than 100 feet below ground?
You'd only do that if there were a tunnel to be accessed through it.
Exactly, said Decker.
But why in the hell would the government sell off that land with those weapons buried there? That's what I don't get.
The easiest answer would be the folks in charge today had no idea it was even there.
But wouldn't there be records of it?
Said Jameson. If so, they might be buried as deep as that crap was. But I think what happened was the Air Force continued to do work on biochem weapons, even after the order came down to stop. Or else they didn't want to destroy what they had worked so long to make. So they, or some rogues working there, decided to bury the shit. Maybe they thought it could come in useful down the road. Or they didn't want anyone to know what they were doing, or what they had come up with. But they had to put it somewhere that they thought was safe. Back then, nobody ever imagined they'd be fracking up here. Jameson said,
And Daniels was the only one left who knew the truth? I can understand his telling Purdy. He was in the Air Force and had security clearances and all. But why would he tell Irene Kramer? Hell, he wouldn't even tell us at first.
Decker said, Kramer's mother was a spy. Maybe the daughter learned some interview techniques from her mother. She could have taken her time, asked innocuous questions at first. Maybe she noticed Daniels' hat like I did. Maybe she researched him after he let something slip. She was a PT person. He liked her. She probably made him feel comfortable. She could have spent months working on him until she got most of the story from him. But she didn't get all of it, which led her to come here and start asking questions. The fact that she was trying to meet oil field hands and not people from the military facility should have been a clue. She probably found out it was on the land around the installation, but she just didn't know exactly where.
But still, you would have thought Daniels would have been more careful.
He's an old guy, Alex. I'm not saying he's not sharp, because he is. But he wasn't going to be on his guard now to the extent he was all those years ago. And he probably never thought she would ever do anything with that information. He couldn't have known about Kramer's past, or who her mother was.
So, a perfect storm,
said Jameson. That's right.
So then who killed Kramer? The people behind All American?
They would be the ones with a motive. Same for Parker and Ames. They had learned things and had to be eliminated. And Purdy might be in that mix as well.
And maybe Kramer had some evidence, which she swallowed, and they cut her open to get it back. And they blackmailed Walt Southern to mess with the post reports.
It all fits together, agreed Decker. In fact, it's the only thing that makes sense.
So whoever is behind this has some serious money.
And the sort of firepower they've brought to this area isn't cheap either, like Roby said.
But what would be the reason to release biochem weapons in a remote area like this? I mean, I get that it would be terrible to happen anywhere, but to do the most damage, you'd set the stuff off in a large city where millions of people and billions of dollars of property could be impacted.
Well, it might have been impossible to dig the bunker up without anyone knowing. And if they did succeed in digging it up, how were they going to safely open that crypt and collect the stuff inside, and then transport it out of here without anyone knowing?
But still.
And you forget that while there aren't millions of people here, there are billions of dollars worth of property in North Dakota. Jameson said,
Of course, the oil and gas. It could have made this place uninhabitable and contaminated the oil and gas fields for centuries.
That's right.
When they got back to the hotel, Jameson pulled the SUV to the curb and said,
What now?
I don't know about you, but I'm going to take a shower. Maybe none of that stuff got out of the pipe, but maybe some of it did. Who knows? I'm going to call Stan and tell him to do the same thing.
Jameson's eyes widened.
Right. I think I'm going to take a shower, too, and go through a couple bars of soap.
They were about to climb out of the SUV when Jessica Reel appeared at the driver's side glass and said,
You need to come with me.
Why?
Decontamination.
Do you know what was down there?
Said Jameson anxiously.
Not definitively, but the speculation mandates that you two go in for decon and testing.
My brother-in-law, began Decker.
We've already picked him up, and the men from the pumper truck.
She pointed down the street.
We have a van over there. Get in the back and put on the suits that are in there.
Wait a minute. Are you saying we're contagious?
I'm saying we don't know. We'll take charge of your SUV. It needs to be tested, too, so leave the keys.
She moved back and pointed to the van. They climbed into the back of the van and put on the hazmat suits that had been laid out for them. They even had their own closed-loop air pack systems.
Okay, this is scary,
said Jameson through her face mask.
Do you really think we're contaminated?
I guess we'll find out soon enough, said Decker. But we better not be.
Well, yeah, duh.
No, I mean, we have murders to solve.
Chapter 73. It was the next day, and every known test had been run on them, Baker, and the other men in their vehicles before they'd finally been given the all clear. Whatever was in the pipe, first the water and then the concrete, had stopped it from escaping. A federal hazmat response team was currently at the site, walling it off and using sophisticated detection technology to assess the situation. Jameson and Decker were in a small conference room at their hotel. Roby, Reel, and Blue Man sat across from them. Blue Man said,
You are to be commended. What you did saved a lot of lives.
The target had to be the oil and gas, said Decker.
Which explains the chatter we were getting from the Middle East, said Blue Man.
Meaning the threat came from there,
said Jameson.
We believe so, and it would make sense from a geoeconomic perspective. Fracking in North Dakota helped in a very large way to make this country mostly energy independent, stated Blue Man. That is good for us, and that is very bad for every other petroleum-producing nation, including those who are members of OPEC, especially the Saudis. We still import oil from them, just not nearly as much as we used to.
So what exactly was down there in the ground?
Asked Jameson.
No one's told us.
That's because we don't know for certain. But since I learned of your discovery, I have been in touch with some high-level contacts from the DOD and informed them of the situation here. With some prodding from my superiors, they, in turn, did some deep digging within certain old records.
With what result?
Asked Jameson.
It seems that decades ago, certain elements within the Air Force community might not have followed the presidential directive to discontinue all work on such weapons and destroy the stockpiles that did exist. Work on one project may have continued. The results of that work may well have been what ended up in that bunker.
There's no maybe about it, said Decker. It did.
Any idea what that project was?
Asked Jameson.
We can't be sure until they get into that bunker and examine the contents. That will take some time. In addition to the concrete that was poured down that pipe, they will be using vapor seals, pressure chamber technology, and other protocols to ensure that what is in the pipe and bunker remains there until it can be permanently dealt with. The problem is that if an explosive was used in piercing the bunker, some of the contents may have escaped already into the surrounding earth. The response team understands that and is using every tool they have to contain it until a complete study is conducted and a full-scale remediation plan can be implemented. Jameson persisted.
Don't you have some idea after talking to those people?
I have come to learn that back then the Air Force, as an alternative to the deployment of nuclear weapons, was very keenly working on developing synthetic airborne weapons, including ricin, anthrax, sarin, a substance today known as Compound 1080, and an inhalable form of the world's most lethal poison, botulinum. If I had to guess, I would say that the medium used was some type of laboratory-crafted spore. I say that only because I was aware of a similar project being undertaken by the Soviets during the Cold War.
Wonderful how really smart people spend so much time trying to kill each other,
commented a clearly disgusted Jameson.
Yes, well, anyway, it was intended that these weapons would be deployed from aircraft, making the Air Force the perfect medium to deploy them, of course. I have also learned that the intent back then was to devise these toxins in such a way that once released, they would linger in the ground for centuries, in the same way that radiation from a nuclear explosion would. Years later, if you happened to walk along and disturb such toxins on the ground and then inhaled them, you could be dead within hours or even minutes without ever knowing what had killed you. And I was told that one of the other goals was to make some or all of these poisons, once inhaled, capable of being transmitted through the air from one living thing to another. In other words, they wanted to make a synthetic plague that was actually far deadlier than the original version.
That is absolutely horrible,
said Jameson. But effective if mass death over a long period of time is your goal, pointed out Blue Man. It's no wonder they eventually buried it in that bunker. They probably didn't know how to destroy these weapons safely. You couldn't burn them or blow them up without risk that some of the airborne contaminants would escape. And once they did, they could be there a long time waiting to kill the unsuspecting. And with prevailing wind patterns, storms, and unsuspecting contaminated people moving here and there, it could have affected a far larger area than simply North Dakota. It would have been truly catastrophic and beyond this country's capability to adequately respond. He smiled at the pair. But you two and your brother-in-law managed to stop it.
My brother-in-law deserves the credit there, said Decker.
Decker,
admonished Jameson.
If you hadn't figured it out, Stan would have had no chance to stop it.
I think there's enough credit to go around, noted Blue Man. He looked expectantly at Decker. Now, it's one thing to stop such a plot. It's quite another to catch those who did it.
Decker said, We're talking deep pockets. The mercenaries they've used aren't cheap, and neither was paying for the land and all the equipment to do what they almost succeeded in doing.
We're making inquiries, but I'm afraid it will be a long and involved process, and it may well be that no definitive answer comes from it. And even if we do determine who was responsible, our options may be limited in how to respond.
That's bullshit, said Jameson.
Blue Man smiled demurely. And it's also the nature of geopolitics. For better or worse, some of the players undoubtedly behind this are countries we need in other areas to keep the world relatively stable.
So they'll get a pass?
Said Jameson.
If there are no consequences, what will stop them from trying again?
I didn't say there would be no consequences, said Blue Man. But there may be no public consequences.
So a cover-up?
Exclaimed Jameson. And since I know you were a journalist, every molecule of your nature rises up in protest at the very thought of such a thing. And I can't say that you're wrong. I can only say that the matter is complicated, and not everyone in power believes in transparency. Or if they do, it's their version of it.
Jameson shook her head in resignation, but said nothing.
Decker said, We still have the matter of finding out who killed Irene Kramer and Pamela Ames, and abducted Hal Parker, and who probably killed Ben Purdy, and did murder his mother.
Jameson added,
And who was also blackmailing Walt Southern. It has to be the same people behind the biochemical weapons scheme.
It could be that someone local was working with foreign elements to bring this plot about, said Roby. I think that's exactly what happened, said Decker. Now we just have to find out who the local is.
Chapter 74. Decker, Baker, and Jameson were having dinner at the OK Corral Saloon that evening.
Don't think I've been poked and prodded that much since I was in boot camp, said Baker, as he sipped on a bottle of beer.
Well, it could have been a lot worse,
noted Jameson.
We could be in a morgue.
Baker nodded.
So do they know what's down there? Saw a big crew pouring over the place until they put up these screens to block the sight lines.
Let's just say it was some serious shit from the past that never should have been put down there in the first place,
said Jameson.
Baker shook his head. Damn military playing God like always. I mean, when are they going to learn?
Don't hold your breath, said Decker. I suppose you heard about Hugh Dawson.
Baker nodded, looking sad.
I tried to visit Caroline at the hospital, but they said she was still medicated and asleep. How's she doing?
It's going to take time,
said Jameson.
She's been through a lot.
Shane lost his father, but it wasn't the same situation, noted Decker. Although we've learned Hugh was no saint.
Considering Hugh Dawson killed McClellan, I think they both have it pretty bad,
Jameson countered.
What the hell are you talking about?
exclaimed Baker. Decker quickly explained what had happened. Baker sipped his beer, a thoughtful expression on his face.
Guess it shows you money can't buy happiness. I mean, those two were rolling in it, and now they're both dead and won't enjoy a penny of it.
Decker looked up as the door opened and in walked Kelly, Shane, Liz Southern, and surprisingly, a tired-looking Caroline Dawson.
Look who's all together again,
commented Jameson.
The sister and her two honorary brothers, added Decker.
Brothers who would rather be something else, you mean,
countered Jameson. Kelly spotted them and led the others over to their table. Baker stood and reached a hand out to Dawson.
I tried to see you at the hospital, but you were asleep, Caroline. I'm so sorry about, well, everything.
Thank you, Stan. That's very kind of you,
she said, her voice low and unnaturally slow. To Decker, her unfocused eyes and feeble manner showed that she was not yet fully recovered from her ordeal. Jameson, noting this, said,
Are you sure you should be out?
She asked.
You look like you should still be in the hospital.
Southern said,
I told her that until I was hoarse, but she wouldn't listen.
Dawson said,
I didn't want to stay there anymore. I was feeling claustrophobic.
Shane interjected,
The doc said it was okay. She just needs to take it easy.
Do you want us to drive you to your condo?
Asked Jameson. Dawson said,
No, I'm going to go up to my room here and...
Kelly said quickly,
You want me to come with you?
Or I can, added Shane.
No, I'll be fine. Thanks, guys.
She looked at Southern.
Thanks for coming to stay with me at the hospital, Liz. I'll give you a call tomorrow. Sleep well,
said Southern kindly. She headed off as they all watched. Then Shane, Southern, and Kelly sat down at the table.
She doesn't look good, said Baker.
Well, she's been through hell and back,
said Southern defensively.
Shane has too, pointed out Kelly. Lost his dad and all.
He glanced at Shane.
And considering how he died.
Shane shrugged at this and motioned to the waitress and ordered the same beer Decker was drinking. It's not like my old man thought much of me, but he didn't deserve to die like that either. He eyed Decker.
You really think Hugh killed him?
Jameson answered.
I don't know why he would write a suicide note saying he did if he didn't.
Shane looked at Kelly.
What do you think, Joe?
Kelly stared down at his hands.
You know those guys have been at each other for years. Maybe Hugh just reached the last straw. Sell out to McClellan and then make sure he could never enjoy the fruits of it?
But then he kills himself so he could never enjoy his fortune either?
Said Jameson in a doubting tone.
Guilt can make people do crazy things, said Kelly. But I know, none of it makes much sense.
After his beer came, Shane took a sip and eyed Decker.
Something big went down over near the Brothers Colony. Lots of people and trucks, and they put up a shield around it. You know anything about that?
I saw that too when I was driving by there,
said Southern.
What do you know about the All-American Energy Company?
Decker asked Shane.
Seen them around. Never talked to them. Drove by their rig from time to time.
Kelly said,
We've been totally shut out of what's going on over there, Decker. I know enough to know that those are feds swarming the place. You have to know something.
Not that I can share.
He looked at Shane.
You really don't know if your father left you anything? I get that you're not into money and business, but still... Most people would want to know.
Shane finished his beer and glared at Decker.
Look, I went to war, okay? I nearly got killed a bunch of times over there, so I never thought I'd outlive my dad. What the hell did it matter to me about whether he was leaving me his money? Money that he got by digging shit out of the ground. Money that I don't want or need.
What will you do then?
Asked Southern.
Got my farm. I got some of my own money saved. If my old man did leave something to me, maybe I'll donate it. Know a lot of vets who can't even rub two dimes together.
That's good of you, Shane,
commented Jameson.
And Caroline?
Asked Decker.
What about her? Said Shane sharply.
I'm assuming she inherited from her father.
I would imagine so. Hugh doted on her.
Do Did you know her brother well?
Asked Jameson. Shane slowly nodded, his features turning sad. Junior was a great guy, gentle and funny. Had a big heart. We were friends. He didn't deserve what happened to him.
We understand that he was gay,
said Jameson. Yeah, so? Said Shane.
And his father didn't understand that?
His father made his life a living hell. That's why he killed himself.
Caroline said it was an overdose,
said Jameson.
Kelly said, he didn't leave a note. He left a recording. It was pretty damn sad.
You heard it?
I was one of the cops investigating the case, so yeah, I did. I kept a copy of it, in fact. Haven't listened to it since. I'm not ashamed to say I cried when I heard it.
It must have hit Caroline and her mother particularly hard,
said Jameson, as Southern nodded.
Kelly shrugged. It did. I think it would have driven a lasting wedge between her and her father, but then Maddie died and those two were the only ones left. I'm not saying she didn't still care for her father, but it was complicated.
She told us sort of the same thing,
noted Jameson. Decker's phone buzzed. He took it out and looked at a series of photos and reports that had just been delivered in an email. As his gaze ran over them, Decker tensed, and then realization spread over his features. Jameson noticed this and whispered,
What is it?
Decker's gaze drifted up the stairs where Dawson had gone. He rose. Jameson said,
Where are you going?
We're going to see Caroline.
Southern said,
Let me go with you. I think I might be of some help. She is still very vulnerable.
Decker looked at Jameson, who nodded.
Okay, but whatever you hear up there, you don't share with anyone.
Understood.
Kelly said,
I hope that doesn't include me. I am investigating this case.
We'll fill you in,
Jameson assured him. They rose and headed up the stairs, leaving a troubled-looking Kelly and Shane staring after them.
Chapter 75. The space above the bar was a series of rooms. One was a large open area that probably served as an event space. Chairs were stacked against the wall along with folding tables. Piles of linen napkins and tablecloths were on a long buffet set against one wall. Decker, Jameson, and Southern walked through this space to a bar area that was a replica of the one below, only much smaller. Decker spotted a spool of twine sitting on one table. He scooped it up and put it in his jacket pocket.
What's that for?
Asked Jameson.
You'll see.
Next, they passed through an open doorway, turned left, and ran into the only other door there. Decker stepped up to it and knocked.
Caroline, it's Decker and Jameson. We'd like to talk to you.
Please go away. I don't feel well. Caroline?
Said Southern.
I'm here too. I really think you should talk to them. I'm too tired. I'm going to bed.
Southern looked helplessly at Decker.
Your father didn't kill himself, Decker called out through the door, drawing a surprised look from Jameson. He was murdered.
Now they could hear footsteps. The door opened, and there was Dawson, barefoot, and her eyes welling with tears. But the look on her face was one of anger.
What the hell are you talking about? He killed himself. We all saw it.
Can we come in?
Asked Decker.
For a split second, she looked like she might slam the door in their faces, but then her expression softened, and she stepped back. Jameson sat in a chair, and Decker stood while Dawson curled up on the bed. Southern hovered near her, looking anxiously at her friend.
What are you talking about?
Demanded Dawson.
Decker took out his phone.
I just got these pictures and reports from the forensic tech who worked your father's crime scene. They tell a very different story than suicide.
How?
In answer, Decker took out the spool of twine and rolled out a length of it about a foot longer than he was tall and held it up.
Twine?
Said Dawson, looking confused.
I had the tech measure the twine that was found at the scene. It was 7 feet, 4 inches long. That's about the length of this section of twine.
So?
So why would he use a length of twine that long? From the triggers to the gun stock and back to his hand was about 43 inches. He had to wrap it around the stock to pull the triggers the right way to discharge it. Then he wraps it once around his hand. That's maybe a few inches. What's the other 3 feet or so for?
I don't know. Maybe he just cut off a long length without measuring it. The rest was just extra, so that proves nothing.
No, all of that length was actually needed.
What do you mean?
A mark made by the twine was found around your father's wrist, and another trace of it through one of the handles on the desk drawer. I also had the tech take pics from overhead to show the top of the desk.
Why did you do that?
Asked Caroline. Blood spatters can be worth 1,000 words and 1,000 convictions. Blood and other organic matter were everywhere, except the photos I just got reveal a long, thin line that ran across the top of the desk. A thin line that was not impacted by the blood spatters.
What does that mean?
It means that Decker is right,
said Southern, who had been following Decker's words closely.
Someone killed your father.
Decker explained.
When the shotgun went off, the twine that was used to pull the triggers was on top of the desk and pulled taut. It prevented blood and other detritus from colliding with the desk along that line. It's a thin trail, to be sure, but it's clearly there.
He passed her the phone with the photo on it.
I don't understand,
said Dawson, staring down at the picture.
Someone took the twine, wrapped it around the shotgun's triggers and gun stock after securing it to the desk, ran the line around your father's wrist, through the desk drawer handle, and then over the top of the desk where the person probably squatted on the floor, well below the top of the desk and out of harm's way. Then he pulled the twine and fired the shotgun from that position, killing your father. That would account for all of the forensic evidence that we found.
But my father was a big, strong man. He wouldn't have...
Decker interrupted.
He was undoubtedly unconscious. If he was drugged, the autopsy will show that. If he was struck across the face, the shotgun blast would have removed any evidence of such a blow.
So you're really saying he was murdered?
She said in disbelief.
I believe so.
Did he leave a note?
That's right. You couldn't know that, said Decker.
Jameson said,
it said that he had killed Stuart McClellan and was committing suicide because he felt guilt about that.
Do you have the note?
Jameson brought a screen up on her phone.
Here's a photo of it.
Dawson looked at it closely.
That looks like my dad's handwriting and signature. I've seen it often enough. If someone did forge that, they were really good.
Decker said,
we had several people who were familiar with your dad's handwriting say the same thing, but that's not really a confirmation. We're having the handwriting analyzed by an expert. I think they will find that it's a clever forgery.
But why would someone go to all that trouble?
It may tie into Stuart McClellan's murder. And even though I think the suicide note claiming responsibility for McClellan's death is fake, there is some evidence of your father being involved in Stuart's death. And he could have been, only I don't think he killed himself over it. Those are two separate issues.
What sort of evidence?
I can't say right now.
Dawson handed the phone back.
But why would my father want to kill Stuart?
Can you think of any reason? Asked Decker.
Dawson composed herself and sat back on the bed.
No. I mean, they were business rivals, but not really. They needed each other, and Stuart just paid a lot of cash to my dad.
Decker looked disappointed, but then Southern stirred.
Look, I have no proof of any of this, but...
She began.
Anything you tell us will be more than what we have now, said Decker.
She looked nervously at Dawson.
Your mother's death. What about it?
Said Dawson. Southern glanced at Decker before turning back to Dawson.
Everybody said it was an accident, but your mother was born and raised here. She'd been out in blizzards before. Why didn't she get out of the car to check around it when it went off the road?
She would have seen the tailpipe was full of snow. I told Walt the same thing when it happened. He agreed with me, though he could find nothing suspicious in the postmortem. There was an indication she might have been knocked unconscious by the impact,
noted Jameson. Southern shook her head stubbornly.
I don't believe that. I really don't. And I don't think you do either, Caroline. Everyone who grew up around here is used to driving in bad conditions.
She gazed directly at Caroline.
And the Jeep she was in was tried and true, wasn't it?
Dawson nodded.
She'd had it for years.
Are you suggesting that Stuart McClellan had reason to kill Caroline's mother? Said Decker. Why?
This is all speculation on my part.
Let's hear it.
She looked at Dawson.
You all were planning to leave the country and move to France. Right, so what did that have to do with Stuart?
Asked Dawson.
I think that Stuart McClellan was in love with your mother.
Jameson and Decker exchanged glances. She said,
We never heard about that before.
Neither have I,
said Dawson, looking bewildered. Southern looked nervous, but she plunged ahead.
Catherine McClellan and your mom were friends, despite their husbands not being on good terms. In that way, Stuart and your mom spent time together. Now, I knew both women, but I was especially close to Catherine. I can tell you that before she died, Catherine believed her husband was infatuated with Maddie.
My God,
said a stunned Dawson.
I know this is hard for you,
said Southern, her eyes growing misty.
Why didn't you ever mention this before, Liz? I didn't want to upset you, and I couldn't prove anything, but now with everything that's happened...
She paused and looked at Decker in distress.
But maybe I should just shut up now.
I don't think you can now, said Decker.
Southern put a hand on Dawson's shoulder.
Caroline, what do you want me to do? I need you to finish telling us, Liz.
Southern nodded and took a few moments to compose her thoughts.
Some people's love can be wonderful, but when it's not reciprocated, it can turn to something else, something that is hateful and destructive.
So, are you saying that Maddie Dawson knew of Stuart's infatuation and, what, cut him off at the knees? Said Decker.
I think that's exactly what happened, and a man like Stuart would not take rejection well.
I can see that,
said Jameson. A moment of silence passed before Decker said,
So that would be his motive to kill her, in retaliation for being spurned?
Kill her rather than lose her.
Amended Southern.
And Hugh Dawson?
Asked Jameson.
If Catherine noticed Stuart's attraction to Maddie, I can't help but believe he did too. And if he thought Stuart had anything to do with her death. But why kill him now?
Said Jameson. Southern shrugged.
He had sold out to him. I doubt he was going to be staying here. This might have been his last chance.
Jameson said,
He did mention moving away to France. He told us he hoped Caroline would come with him.
Dawson glanced uncertainly at Southern and then at Decker.
I feel like my entire world has turned upside down.
I can understand that, said Decker.
What are you going to do now?
Asked Southern.
Find a killer, said Decker. It's the only reason we're here.
Chapter 76.
So, any thoughts on how to catch the killer?
Asked Jameson. They were in her room at the hotel. Decker hadn't spoken a word since they had left the saloon. Decker didn't answer right away.
Let's get back to basics. Motive, means, and opportunity.
Well, Caroline had the motive to kill her father. She stands to inherit, and she was also furious with him for selling out. But she didn't have the opportunity. We saw her in town around the time Dawson was killed, so she's ruled out. Now, Shane, I guess, could have a motive to kill his father because he stands to inherit, but he also has an alibi for the time McClellan was killed. The exotic toxin came from a place Hugh frequented. I doubt anyone else around here visits Australia on a regular basis. And even though you think Dawson didn't kill himself, that doesn't mean he didn't kill McClellan. From what Liz Southern told us tonight, he might have had a motive if he thought McClellan had killed his wife. He wanted revenge.
Without a word, Decker got up and walked to the door. A stunned Jameson said,
"Where are you going?"
"For a walk."
"Why?"
"I need to think. Something here just doesn't make sense."
After he left, Jameson slumped back on her bed in obvious frustration, put a pillow over her face, and screamed into it. It was chilly and windy, and Decker stuffed his hands into his pockets as he walked along the dark and mostly empty streets of London. The most difficult thing about this case was there were too many angles to adequately grab even one for long. They had been entirely reactive instead of proactive. Every time he felt he was gaining traction, another event would force them into an entirely new direction. Part of that was happenstance, he was sure, and he was also certain that part of it was intentional. He entered the OK Corral saloon once more, took a seat at the bar, and ordered a beer. When it came, he cradled it, closed his eyes for a few moments, and went over everything in his head. Irene Kramer was dead. Pamela Ames was dead. Hal Parker had been taken. Beverly Purdy was dead. Walt Southern had killed himself. Brad Daniels was nearly killed. Stuart McClellan was dead. Hugh Dawson was dead. And a host of foreign mercenaries were no longer living, largely thanks to Roby and Rio, but others still might be around. However, Deckard did not consider the secret prison to be connected to the above events. That was encapsulated and solved, and the appropriate parties punished. But clearly, the All-American Energy Company and the bunker full of toxic chemical and biological weapons were connected, and the responsible parties had not been fully accounted for and punished. Another question really nagged at him. How had these mercenary types even learned about the secret bunker with the weapons? Brad Daniels would surely have mentioned any foreign-looking folks coming to visit him and asking strange questions. So by process of elimination, they could have learned about it one of two ways, from Ben Purdy or Irene Kramer. Then they could have bought the land where the bunker was buried from the brothers, started the drilling operation, and gone from there. But Kramer had been killed, and it seemed obvious to Decker that Purdy was dead too. So had they learned about the bunker or parts thereof from each of them, so that each of them had to later die? Then Decker considered a question he never had before. Did Purdy and Kramer know each other? Were they working together to figure this out? And had they gotten discovered and then were killed? And what had Kramer swallowed that they needed to so desperately get back that they cut open her belly and intestines looking for it? All good questions, and he had not a single answer to any of them. And by this point in the investigation, he should have had at least one answer. He opened his eyes and drank his beer, sullenly looking over the bar area as he did so. He was growing weary of this town because it would not give up the secrets it was holding, and his infallible memory was not providing much help either. A man sat down next to Decker. When Decker glanced over, he was staring at Will Roby. The man was quietly dressed in jeans, an oversized sweatshirt, and worn boots. A John Deere baseball cap sat on his head. If he was armed, Decker saw no bulge. Maybe that was the reason for the bulky sweatshirt. Roby ordered a beer and waited for it to come as he continually scanned the room and everyone there.
"You look pensive," Roby said. "That's because I am. Did you find what was in that bunker?"
"We're officially not in the loop. DOD and Homeland Security are all over it. But unofficially, I can tell you that they haven't yet. Slow and steady is the rule for that. You were right about the tunnel. They broke through the wall and found it. They put additional countermeasures on top of the cement your friend poured into the pipe to ensure that stuff will never get to the surface. They're probably going to have to build another bunker around the original vault before they're comfortable opening it up and seeing exactly what's inside."
"Anything else?"
asked Decker.
We did some digging on the All-American Energy Company. Turns out there are international layers to it, which puts it squarely in my agency's wheelhouse.
International how?
Roby said.
It's a shell, owned by another shell incorporated in Bermuda that is, in turn, owned by another shell we ran to ground in London. After that, the trail vanished.
And with North Dakota fracking offline, what would that do to this country's energy independence?
It wouldn't help it, and the price of certain types of crude and even natural gas would have spiked.
So that helps other energy-producing countries, said Decker.
The Middle East, Russia, Canada, Venezuela.
I don't see the Canadians behind this, and Venezuela is imploding right now.
So either the sheiks or Putin, then, opined Roby.
Or maybe both, said Decker. The world has produced some strange bedfellows lately, and Russia has made inroads into that part of the world for sure. But they had to have local operatives here to get the lay of the land, do the deal to get the property, and set up the whole thing while at the same time keeping under the radar.
Roby took a swallow of his beer.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So how do you get to the finish line?
We keep digging. It's all we can do.
Ben Purdy was digging, and it cost him, and his mother.
Yes, it did, said Decker.
But I've still been wondering how Purdy...
He stopped and set his beer down.
What is it?
When Decker didn't answer, Roby said more urgently,
Decker.
Decker looked at him.
Shit, I've been looking at this thing totally bass-ackwards.
How so?
We gotta go.
Go where?
Asked Roby.
To Hal Parker's place.
Chapter 77. On the drive out in Roby's vehicle, Decker said,
I just assumed that Purdy had been told the story of the bunker by Brad Daniels and then started doing some digging, ran into the wrong people, and that sealed his fate.
Well, we've all been thinking that.
But that doesn't mean we're right.
Lay out your theory for me, said Roby.
You said that Brad Daniels told you he divulged everything to Purdy.
That's right. I don't think he held anything back. He was about to do the same for us when we got attacked.
Decker said,
Okay, let's look at the situation fully and not piecemeal. Purdy's a veteran member of the Air Force, trained and experienced.
Right.
And he's attending a military event where he's just been told by someone who used to work at the very same installation decades ago that there's the possibility of a bunker full of biochemical weapons buried on land belonging to the Air Force. That is a clear and present danger to everyone in the area. A real national security risk, if ever there was one. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay, if you were in Purdy's position, with his experience, and you had learned all of that, what would you do?
I would report it to my superior officer and let them worry about it. It's just common sense, and also how someone like Purdy would naturally react.
Exactly. But also think about this. I doubt that Daniels told Irene Kramer everything he told Purdy. So with Purdy, there would have been no need to dig into anything. He already knew all he needed to know. He just reports it, and the Air Force looks into it. His job is done. If he's proved right, he gets a medal and maybe a promotion. He doesn't have to be involved anymore.
Well, he might have been afraid of retaliation within the Air Force if they did let all this come out.
Why? Brad Daniels is well into his 90s. I seriously doubt there's anyone left in the Air Force who had anything to do with this. And even if he were afraid of retaliation, there are whistleblower laws to protect someone with the sort of information Purdy possessed. He could have communicated what he knew safely through that channel.
So what are you saying, Decker?
You'll see.
They arrived at Hal Parker's home, and Decker led Roby inside. He went over to the wall of pictures he had seen on his previous visit here and pointed to one.
Recognize him?
Roby's jaw slackened.
That's Ben Purdy.
He knew Parker. He obviously hunted with him. I remembered at the Purdy Ranch in Montana that they had animal heads mounted on the wall. Beverly Purdy said her husband and son were avid hunters.
So you think there's some connection with Purdy and Parker? He did find the body of Irene Kramer.
I do. So what is your theory?
Decker seemed startled by this query.
My theory is that Purdy didn't report what he knew to his superiors because he saw certain personal advantages in concealing it, and he wanted to take full advantage of them.
What exactly do you mean by taking full advantage?
His service records show that he was a really smart guy. He'd been promoted frequently and had received a lot of commendations. He went overseas frequently to attend conferences and other meetings and was always educating himself. Among other places, he went to Qatar and Jordan.
Roby ruminated on this before answering.
So you mean he might have met some folks there who would be very interested in destroying the fracking industry in North Dakota?
Yes, and they would no doubt pay him enormous sums of money and also provide all the manpower he would need.
And his mother?
Yeah, they killed his mother. Whether he was involved in that decision or not, I don't know. But a brilliant kid stuck in the middle of nowhere who'll top out at maybe Master Sergeant after another 10 years of service? He might have aimed higher. He might have aimed high enough to have committed treason against his own country in return for a fortune and a change of address, which would also explain him going AWOL.
And the research you found at his mother's house? If Daniels had told him everything, why would he need to do that?
If I were him and I had a grand scheme that would involve dealing with some very serious and dangerous people, I would want to verify everything. I wouldn't accept the word of a 90-something-year-old guy living in a nursing home. He needed to make certain, not blindly accept what might be the skewed memories of an old man.
So he was responsible for killing Kramer and Ames, and...
He pointed to the photo.
Kidnapping Parker?
An uncertain Decker shook his head.
That's far from clear, Roby. As I said, Purdy knew a lot more than Kramer did. She came up here to dig for information. She knew it had something to do with the oil fields around the Air Force Station, and she knew whatever it was in the ground and dangerous. That's why she made that comment to Judith White about not eating the food they grew there. But that was all she knew. I think she wanted to expose this whole thing to make the U.S. government look bad in retaliation for what it had done to her mother. But why would Purdy need her? What could she possibly tell him that he didn't already know? And we've been able to show no connection between them.
But if Kramer came up here to dig into the situation, she might have run into Purdy. He couldn't let her tell anyone what she knew. It would ruin his plan. He would have every reason to kill her.
And what did she swallow that he needed to get back?
Something that would expose the plan.
Decker nodded, but didn't look convinced.
I guess it's possible. But it doesn't explain what happened to Parker and Ames.
So, what now? Said Roby.
We need to find Purdy. That's the only way to know for sure.
If he was behind this, won't he be long gone by now?
Maybe, and maybe not.
And if you're wrong, and he's not behind this,
then he's probably dead.
They left the house, and a moment later, everything went dark for both of them. Chapter 78. Roby's eyes fluttered open and then closed. He moved not a muscle, seeming to remain remarkably still. He was actually testing the strength of the restraints around his hands and ankles. He sniffed the air and got a lungful of noxious smells in return. Next, he listened. For anyone, anything, any type of nearby threat. Finally, he opened his eyes and shifted his gaze from one spot to the next, taking it all in. He was in a room with no windows and no door. This puzzled Roby, but only for an instant. He angled his gaze upward and saw the ladder leading to what looked to be a trapdoor in the ceiling. He lifted his arms until he felt the resistance. The same with his legs. He looked down, and in the dim light provided by the sole overhead bulb, he observed the chains around his limbs that were attached to a thick iron ring set in the floor. They had shackled his hands in front of him, which was the only positive development that Roby could see. He shifted his weight to the right and saw the hulking figure of Amos Decker lying a foot from him. Decker, too, was shackled, and his chains were also inserted into the same floor ring. Decker was also awake and staring at him.
"Not good," he said softly.
Roby gave one curt nod in agreement. They had taken both his pistols. He could feel their absence. He was sure they had taken Decker's gun as well.
"They got the jump on us." "Any idea where we might be?" asked Decker.
Roby once more looked around.
"Underground. Air is musty with an overlay of petroleum products. No windows. Ceiling trap door. I'd say maybe an old underground storage facility for an abandoned oil well."
Decker nodded and looked around. He managed to sit up and planted his back against the wall. Roby did the same. The pair were shoulder to shoulder, looking down at the thick chains that stood in the way of their freedom.
"Feel like I got hit by a truck," said Decker, "but I can't remember anything of what happened, and that's saying something for me."
"They probably deployed the same concoction I used on the woman at the Air Force facility. Incapacitation agent blended with an amnesiac component. We remember nothing that might have happened, who we might have seen, or how they got us here. Although that wouldn't be much, because the spray works pretty much instantly."
"So do you have a plan to get us out of here?"
"Working on it."
Roby tested the chains once again. Solid, no cracks. Not an imperfection or weak spot he could see. The floor ring was about 2 inches in width. An elephant wouldn't have been able to defeat it. The steel plate it was a part of was securely bolted to the floor. He eyed the door in the ceiling.
"That's our only way out. I wonder if they wired it, just in case."
"Well, I don't see us getting that far, so what does it matter?"
Roby didn't answer him. He reached down, lifted his sweatshirt, and unbuckled his belt.
"Don't tell me you have some sort of acid in there to melt our chains," said Decker, eyeing him incredulously. "I think I saw that on TV."
Roby had removed a Velcro backing from the inside of his belt and plucked out two slender pieces of metal that had been hidden there.
"Just lockpicks. And this isn't a TV show."
He went to work on his shackles and soon had himself and Decker free. Roby next eyed the ladder and the door in the ceiling.
"Just stay here while I check it out."
He gripped the ladder and began to climb. As Roby neared the door, he ran his gaze over the frame, looking for stray wires, a power pack, or anything else that would give away some sort of booby trap. Seeing none, he gingerly pushed against the wood.
It didn't budge. "Locked," he said. "No surprise there."
He came back down and looked around the room. In an old bucket were four long iron spikes. He slipped them through his belt, took off his boot, and uncovered a cavity in the heel. Decker saw a small blob of what looked like Play-Doh.
"C4?
"Semtex, but it does the same thing,"
replied Roby, as he removed something else from the cavity and worked away combining the two elements. When that was done, he clambered back up the ladder, pressed the Semtex against the door, uncovered two wires he had pressed into the blob, and twined their ends around one another. He quickly retreated and grabbed Decker, and they backed away as far as possible from the door. 10 seconds later, the explosive detonated, blowing the ceiling door out of the way. Their escape path was now exposed. But Roby didn't rush forward. He kept a hand on Decker's shoulder. Decker could see the intensity on the other man's face as he waited, listening and watching.
"Okay, let's move."
Roby scrambled up the ladder first, with Decker following more slowly. Roby eased his head above the rim of the doorway and looked around. He jumped clear of the opening and helped Decker through. They were in what looked like a long passageway made of dirt and rock, with steel beams overhead and posts set in the dirt at regular intervals. Fluorescent lights over